This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. And tonight we have two sponsors for the show. The first sponsor is Teacher's Pet, an iPhone app designed specifically for teachers to quickly capture notes, reminders, and to-do items in class. And also we welcome back BDoc's Timeline 3D for iOS, a great friend of the show. Timeline 3D is an iOS app for iPod, iPhone, and iPad that lets you make timelines that you can present and share in class or to meetings or to other events. So we'll tell you more about those as the show goes on. And let's get into it. Bradley, how are you?
It's a great week. We are officially on the countdown to the end of school. Our last day is the 24th. And then my wife and I are moving on the 23rd. So okay. It's going to be a busy few weeks for the Chambers household. Mm-hmm. How about you? Everything going well?
Everything was going really well until I managed to damage my knee again last week. Which, if you remember, I had a cartilage repair on my left knee last year, back in September. And they told me back then that the success rate for the operation I had was 40%. So I am now firmly in the 60% for whom it has not been successful. And I'm probably looking at another operation in the next couple of weeks. So we may have an interruption in our show schedule, but we'll try not to.
Well, you've got the free healthcare, so it doesn't really matter. Don't you make money off of that, or is that how that works?
Yeah, well, you do actually get a free lunch, I have to say.
So, there's that. Yeah. Go, you know, over here, you're out of luck. No, that's a bad
You just
discussion.
Have to cut it off with a saw, right?
Yeah.
You saw your own leg off and let it bleed until you get no blood left.
That's a rat hole of a discussion. So before we get started, I have a selfish announcement to make. Okay. I have a new project that when the show is released, I will have launched it. It's called Learning to Love Evernote. And it's a screencast series at lovingevernote.com. And it's not really meant to be something for someone who's just getting started with Evernote, has never downloaded it. But it's really more for the person who has an Evernote account, maybe have it installed, but doesn't know how to use it or doesn't know what to use it for. And, Fraser, if you remember, that's kind of what really got this show in some way started, is I was that way. And then you showed me your workflows and showed me how I used it. And now I'm really all in on Evernote. It's at the center, certainly of my paperless lifestyle, but in some ways my entire life, because so much of my work and personal stuff is in Evernote now. I've been talking to people recently, and I've sit down and done some like screen sharing sessions with some friends and showed them how I use it. And I thought, well, maybe other people would have an interest in that. So it's $5 or $4.99 for 10 DRM free videos. You can purchase online. It'll send you an email to download it. And it's at lovingevernote.com. So if you're want to get more into Evernote, that'd be a great way to start.
That's awesome. I've actually had a sneak preview of some of these shows, and they look really, really good. I think one of the things for apps like Evernote, and I remember writing similar things on my blog about things like OmniFocus, is that these apps where, and also Aperture for that matter, these apps where you're kind of building up a database of stuff, people are often really, it's not that they don't know how to get started with it, but they're unsure how to structure what they do with it in such a way that it kind of scales up for the long period. So one of the most popular articles on my blog is from years and years ago, in which I sort of describe the way that I organize photos and projects in Aperture. And that still gets hits even today, because it just explains at least one way. It's not the only way, but it's one way how you can structure your projects and folders and projects and so on that will kind of let your Aperture library scale up to years and years and years worth of photos. So I'm looking forward to that shipping, Bradley. I think it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, speaking of old blog posts, I can tell that some schools must be getting some various error messages in Apple Configurator, because I'm consistently getting hits every day on old posts I did really from last fall of how to deal with those error messages. And so I guess you can see Configurator must be being more widely used as we go forward, and people are seeing various little quirks here and there.
Well, sort of, it is the season for practicing things like that, isn't it? Because as I commented on Twitter the other day, it was every school sysadmin 6 weeks before they can actually start pulling things apart are desperate to pull everything apart. So I've kind of been spending this whole week looking at new MDM servers, playing with new features in our Aerohive network that I haven't really been able to turn on until now, and sort of just desperate for school to finish so I can start getting in there and tinkering and changing things. So this is the season for... for encountering the bugs in the error messages?
Well, I really, in some ways, envy schools that are like separated from other organizations, because we share our building with our church, and then the church also has a family life center that's across the street that's on the same land, and they're open from 6 a.m. until 9 p.m. pretty much every day. And so I have very small maintenance windows to tinker with stuff, because people are always here, so I can't really just break things. I wish I was in some ways had a building that like was just mine, and in the summer when people went home, I could just go to town. But
yeah, well, that's going to be my playground for the next the end of June, basically, all of July and most of August, mucking about with networks and VLANs and all that kind of stuff. So can't wait. So many plans.
Yes. I guess before we get started, let's take a moment and I guess go and thank one of our sponsors. Mm-hmm. Teacher's Pet has been with us for a few weeks now. It's really an iPhone app at its core that's designed for teachers to quickly capture notes, reminders, and to-dos in class. And one of the things that I talk to people often about, and I mentioned on the show, that schools need specialized solutions for like CRM and things like that, because, you know, something like Salesforce is great, but it doesn't handle class promotions. You know, you can track students in Salesforce, but how do you promote them the next year? And so what Teacher's Pet is to me, it's like a to-do app built for teachers. So one of the keys to effective teaching is tracking and acting on student behavior consistently and in a timely manner. So by knowing who you're teaching and when your classes are, Teacher's Pet can help you achieve this. You start by entering all of your class and schedule and student information into the app. And once you're in the class, click the new item button, and the app knows which student list to bring up. Choose the students and set a reminder for the next class with just one tap. Never forget to follow up on missed homework again. Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that I think has really been interesting is how quickly can I do things in an app? I've mentioned this on previous shows that my father-in-law owns a dental practice, and to watch their software, it's just terrible. It takes 10 clicks to do anything. And so an app can get something done within one click. To me, that's a good app. So really inexpensive on the App Store, $2.99. And if you're buying in bulk through the volume purchase program, it's only $1.50. So it's a great way to send your teachers home with a new app for the summer. We'll have a link to the app in the show notes, and it'll be on outofschool.net as well.
Awesome. I remember there's a story, possibly apocryphal. You remember Palm Pilots and Palm OS and all those old kind of handheld organizers?
Yeah.
There's a story that goes that there used to be somebody whose job it was at Palm to be a tap counter. And the tap counter was the guy who went around doing basically over-the-shoulder usability studies on Palm software to see how many taps it took to get a job done. So how many taps did you have to make on the device to create a calendar entry, for example, or how many taps did you have to go through to send a message or write an email or something like that. And sometimes today I think, you know, Apple, Google, big companies could really do with somebody doing that job again. If you think how many steps it takes to make a calendar appointment on an iPhone, it's much more than it used to do in a Palm device, as far as I remember.
Well, that's why I love Fantastical on the iPhone so much. I open it, click one thing, I can type, hit add, and I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, people will also come back at you and say, well, Siri, but then, you know, be Scottish and try and use Siri and see how that goes for you.
I'm getting much more use out of Siri on the go now, because my city just recently turned on LTE for AT&T. So now I have LTE when I'm out of the office. And it's really, because I've always had good luck with Siri when on Wi-Fi, but it makes me think that my frustration with it in the past may have been AT&T's fake 4G network, because it's much better now. Or maybe Apple's improving as, you know, alongside that. But it's much quicker, much more accurate for me anyways. I know mileage may vary.
That's the thing with voice commands, isn't it? Everybody's different.
Yeah, and you know, you've got the Scottish accent, and I've got the Southern drawl. You know, they always joke that financial advisors in the Southern U.S. don't do very well, because no one wants to give their money to people that talk like us.
Well, they say the Scottish accent is one of the more trusted accents in the U.K., so I'm not sure about that, but what can you say? Trust me. I know what I'm doing. Great, so coming off the back of our gigantic Apple configurator doubleheader, Bradley, I thought we would talk tonight about configuration profiles, which we deliberately kind of skirted around a bit in the past couple of shows, and we sort of waved our hands and said, well, you can do that with a profile, blah. And then we deliberately left what you might put in those profiles for another show, and that is this show. So shall we get into it?
Let's do it.
Okay. So Configuration profiles are kind of a weird thing. They're basically, I guess, XML files of a type where they define what are called payloads. And each payload is a kind of bundle of settings that can be applied or enforced on an... Okay, I'm back up. So a configuration profile is a file that defines a set of settings. Each set is called a payload in configuration profile terminology. And what that does is it lets you create, without the device in your hand, it lets you create some settings. And then when you have the devices, deploy those settings to the devices en masse using something like Apple Configurator. So you can say in your configurator, all of these devices should get this profile, go. And then as you connect those devices, it will refresh them and they will have that configuration profile applied. What do you use profiles for, Bradley?
I guess, we don't do a ton with them. The mm-hmm. biggest thing is obviously the Wi-Fi. We have a mail profile. We have the passcode profile. Obviously, the general stuff is turned on. It's really... In cart-based deployments, you have a different philosophy than with what you're wanting to do than versus like a one-to-one. In mm-hmm. some ways, with a one-to-one, you're trying to make it, from my perspective, as easy it is to hand it to that person and get them what they need. So like having the subscribe calendars and things like that already on there. Mm-hmm. But, it's very, very easy, in my opinion, to set these things up. Apple's done a good job of it. To me, I think if you're one of those schools that says we're not fancy, we don't do that much, at least go ahead and configure your Wi-Fi profile.
I think the way I first got into configuration profiles was, we actually used them from day one in our deployment. We used configuration profiles from the start on our iPads, and what we did was we enforced certain things. And when I got started with them, the temptation when you start with a configuration profile is to make sort of one profile to rule them all. So you put all the settings you want in this profile and then you just blast it onto the devices and your job's done. But over time, I've kind of come to realize that having layered profiles is really, really useful. Now, we'll talk a bit more about that in a minute, just how you can structure your profiles so that you don't have to have everything in one go. But the key realization to start with is that you can have multiple profiles on one device. You don't have to only have one profile. So the way a profile is structured is that there's a general section in which you include information about the name of the profile, who's installing it, why it's being installed, and sometimes you can put in what's called a consent message, which is information displayed to the user about why it's being installed. And then crucially, and this is where some action happens that we should dig into right away, is there's security settings for when the profile can be removed. And secondly, there's now, in recent versions of Configurator and iOS for that matter, a setting for when you can automatically remove a profile. So the key thing to understand, I think, for most people, Bradley, would you say, is that configuration profiles and iOS sort of go hand in hand. And they kind of evolve together.
Yeah, because, of course, we've mentioned it in the past, but, and you just said it. I mean, this was possible pre-configurator. You had the iPhone configuration utility. Yep. It wasn't as easy to use, don't get me wrong, but it did exist. And so these profiles aren't new. Of course, if you beta test anything, you're installing profiles. And, of course, some people have said this is like the biggest, in some ways, security risk in iOS. I know... there's a few apps on the App Store, I believe, we can help you optimize your data usage. Well, all they're doing is running you through a VPN service. And so, that's a security concern if you don't know what you're doing, I guess, when you're installing it.
So the reason you're saying that configuration profiles represent a security risk is because people who don't know what they're doing could be prompted to install a profile that would then change some settings on the device in a way that they might not want.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe I'm trying to think of an example. Maybe if spoofing a spoofed Wi-Fi connection or something like that, making you auto connect. If they could somehow get it onto your iPhone, and then they could set up a rogue access point that you could set to be automatically connected to, and then they could start sniffing your traffic. I mean, again, it's not like it's a wide open landscape where you're going to be hacked immediately, but configuration profiles do change settings. So
yes,
it's important, you know, to understand what they're doing.
They're very powerful.
And so I think that's why the consent message, I think, is also important. Mm-hmm. You know, especially, you know, you've been tweeting a lot about the enrollment in Jamf and Aerohive. And I think it's important for a student to know, like, this is why we're doing this. Not so much so that they are, you know what you're doing, but maybe to teach them, like, understand what your device is doing. Like, if you go somewhere and they ask you to install something, understand what they're wanting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, once you've installed a profile, you can go into settings and look at what those profiles claim to install. And it shows you what those profiles are delivering to your device. So you can go in and sort of look at it after the fact and say, okay, well, that's got a VPN configuration, but why does it also have this thing? Or why does it change the APN for our cellular connection or something like that? So there's definitely some stuff in there. We should dig into the two settings in general that are really important. One is security, which I mentioned briefly before. Basically, there are three options in this area. There's a pop-up menu, and you can say this basically controls when the profile can be removed from the device. And your options are never, always, and with authorization, okay? So you can embed a password in the configuration profile, and the only way that that profile can be removed from the device is by entering that password on the device itself. So if you think about the sort of end user, if you're in school, there are some things you might want to put on the device that you know you'll never want them off the device. For example, like your 17-plus app restriction, okay? And I reckon that in most cases, you'll probably never not want to have that on. So you could create a single profile that just says restrict apps to 12-plus or below, never remove that profile. So you know that the only way you can get a never removable profile off a device is to completely wipe the device and not restore it from a backup. So you have to set it up as a new device, and that way it's clear of the profile. Obviously, profiles that are always removable, you just go into settings, you hit the profile, and then you hit the button that says remove, and it's gone. So,
why do you think that always is even an option?
I guess the answer to that question is probably to do with things that are temporary. Okay, so for configuration profiles, although their name suggests they're there just to set up devices at the start, they can also be used in a short-term way to deploy something to a device, and then you may want to get rid of it again. So, for example, imagine you were doing some kind of project in school where you wanted easy access to, like, four websites, okay? You could build a configuration profile that just delivered four web clips to the home screen of the device, install that profile for the week that you need them, and then get rid of the profile and all the web clips would go away. So there are some things that you might want in a profile that are of temporary nature as well. So that's always. And then with authorization is obviously just a kind of more controllable version of that.
Yeah, when you click that, it gives you a dialogue to put in a password.
Yeah, that's it. And the password is not your device password. It's the one that's embedded in the profile itself. Yeah, and then automatically removing the profile is something that's kind of new. I don't know if it's new in recent versions of the configurator or if it is new in recent versions of the OS, but it wasn't there in the past. And basically what it does is you can set the profile to self-destruct, basically. And you can have it self-destruct on a certain date or after a certain number of days. And I think one of the ways I thought about using this, Bradley, was in school where, say, somebody has transgressed with the camera or the web, right? You could say, okay, well, I'm going to disable your camera for 7 days. And you put the profile on, and then you don't have to remember to go and take the profile off again with the passcode or whatever that might. In the past, you would have had to put a with authorization profile on and then go back and put in the password to take it off again after you're done. But you could put on a self-destructing profile that would just kill it for 7 days or whatever and then bring it back.
So if you did that, like, would it? I guess it would forget the Wi-Fi connection. So if it was a password-protected Wi-Fi, it would forget that passcode.
When you do what?
If you had it set to automatically remove, like if you had the Wi-Fi configured mm-hmm. inside of the profile and you had the profile set to remove, you know, in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
After 3 weeks and you come back in, would it, I guess it would ask you for the Wi-Fi passcode at that point, like on the device?
That's a really good question. I think you have to be a little careful with Wi-Fi, because I think that if you deliver a Wi-Fi passcode through a profile and then you lose the profile, I believe the settings for it will still know the password for the Wi-Fi because it's in the device keychain. I would need to test that to be absolutely sure, but it is worth testing that because that one in particular can be a bit sticky. So you put the settings on, but when the profile goes away, some of the settings might still be there.
So I'm wondering the same thing about the mail account. Like, would it just delete the mail account at that point?
I think that one does. Yep. I mean, I need to test the Wi-Fi one for sure.
Well, that's not a feature that every school is going to make use of, but there's a lot of interesting use cases for it. And so, I mean, let's say you're in a type of deployment where students bring their own iPads. Like you say, okay, you have to bring this model iPad and we're going to preload it with our stuff on there, like your configuration profile. And you could set that to expire the last day of school.
Absolutely. Yep. Or if you had you're using the global HTTP proxy as another possibility, you know, access to our proxy or access to our school calendar expires at the end of the year or whatever. So there's definitely some good uses for automatically removing profiles as well as ones that are permanently there as well. So that's the general section. The next section that people use a lot is passcode. And passcode, this is where you can get into doing a bit more than you can sometimes do on the device. Now, in previous versions of iOS, you basically had to use a configuration profile to get a complex passcode. I don't know if you've ever seen people with a phone or an iPad where when they go to unlock the device, it brings up a full keyboard and they have to type in a full password rather than just a four-digit passcode to unlock the device. In previous times, you had to have a configuration profile to make that possible. But now you can actually set it on the device as well. But the passcode payload in a configuration profile has certain controls that you can apply that let you require certain quality in the passcode. So the settings you can change are, you can say, allow or disallow a simple value, which is like repeating and ascending and descending character sequences. You can require an alphanumeric value, so you can prevent people just using a numeric PIN code. And then you can set minimum length, minimum number of complex characters, and so on. Interestingly, though, the thing you cannot do with a passcode payload is you can't say what the passcode actually is. And this is something that some people have wanted, I can think of reasons why they want it as well, but it's not possible. All that the passcode payload does is it says this device must have a passcode, and it must be of this quality, and it lasts for this amount of time, and so on. But it does not. You cannot say this device has passcode ABC123, for example. So that's a confusion that some people get into with passcode. Do you use passcodes in your devices at school, Bradley?
We do not. I've got a restrictions passcode on there, but not a device access passcode. You know, it's just one of those things. If you talk to a security nut, they're going to say absolutely always have passcodes. But then you just get into the real world use cases and knowing you're dealing with children. And again, it goes back to me that the fundamentals of iOS is that you just can't break it software-wise on the device. So if someone picks one up when they're supposed to and like goes to theverge.com, why do I care?
Yeah. I guess you don't care until somebody goes to something that they shouldn't be on. And one of the reasons why we have used passcodes for quite young children is because we wanted to kind of foster a culture of accountability around the device. And this is a different thing when you're doing one-to-one versus shared deployments. We wanted to make it that, you know, if it's your iPad and it's only your iPad, and if there are things on the iPad that, you know, should not be there, then we're going to ask you because it's got your passcode on it. And either A, why is that stuff on there by your hand, or B, how come somebody else knows your passcode? Right, which as part of the terms and conditions, you're not supposed to share with somebody. So we use it for accountability purposes for the most part. But there's a couple of other things that you can do in the passcode profile that you may or may not want to do. And one is auto lock time. Yeah, so auto lock passcode time is to do with how long the device stays open before it will automatically lock. And you can set it to none, but then you've got also the choice of between 1 and 5 minutes before it automatically locks. We have used 5 minutes in the past on that one. I'm not sure I'm delighted with it. I personally, I don't know about you, Bradley, but I like to manually lock my devices. None of my personal devices auto-lock themselves, because I find that both annoying and kind of frustrating as well.
I think I do 15 minutes on mine. And, mm-hmm. and I think my thought process was that way, if like I left it at a restaurant, maybe if I was eating dinner and it was sitting there and I left it on the table, by the time someone found it, it would be locked. But it's long enough where it's not as annoying to me. So I don't know. I mean, there's lots of schools of thought
yeah.
there.
Well, so don't confuse it. There's two settings here, right? And this is something that you have to sort of separate out. There's the auto lock time, which is how long the device will lay idle before it turns itself off. And then there's also the grace period for being locked, okay, which is longer. And the grace period is how long the device can be locked before it will prompt you for a passcode again. And I think, like you, I use 15 minutes on my devices, but I don't have them off.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That is confusing. It is confusing.
I will confess to making a big mistake with this in our current setup, for which teachers hate me, but it has helped the kids remember their passwords really well, which is that I set the grace period to none for our devices, which means that every time they lock, they have to be password unlocked. And that was a mistake. I don't think that's the right setting for a school environment, because the security requirements are not that strict. But my frustration with it is that the grace period available in a passcode configuration is no grace period at all, which is what I left it at stupidly. 1 minute, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, or 4 hours. And I think that jump between 15 minutes and an hour is too great a jump, because I would probably like 30 minutes for our purposes. You know, if it's been lying there for more than half a class period unused and locked, then probably you want to lock that. It's a matter of taste. And it's also a matter of defending at the right level as well, because if you have genuinely secure data on your devices in school for whatever reason, then you are going to want to have that shorter rather than longer.
What do you guys do? Like, if you on your next deployment, will you do a failed attempt?
No, because that's a really funny game in schools. One of the things that kids love to do as a kind of low-grade bullying tactic is get somebody's iPad and put in the passcode wrong 5 times, which then locks their device out for an hour. And then, because there's a limiter on how often you can try and fail to put in the password. It disables it for like 5 minutes and then 15 minutes and then an hour and so on. And that has been a funny game at times at school, is to deliberately disable somebody's iPad.
Well, so, I'm looking at the screen here and there's not an option for none. It's 2 through 10 for maximum number of failed attempts.
Yeah. Yep. I think what prevents people from usually getting to 10 is that that speed governor kicks in much earlier than 10 attempts.
That's true.
So you don't get 10 tries on the trot and then it blows up in your face. But you get 2 tries and then you get a 5-minute wait, and then you get another try, and then you get a 15-minute wait, and then you get another try, and you get an hour wait. And eventually, at least on iOS 5, I haven't tried this on 6, but on 5, what happens is eventually you have to connect the device to iTunes and basically restore the device at that point. But that's, you've got to be sitting there doing it for like 2 hours before
you. And if you've misplaced your iPad for 2 hours, then you're lucky it's not stolen.
Indeed. This whole passcode thing is one thing that I would love to see a couple of extra features from Apple on this. And we'll maybe mention my iOS 7 wish list later, but if there was some way that with a configuration profile you could set like a master password, like a skeleton key for the administrator, such that every child who has their device has their passcode that will unlock the device, but then there's also one secure passcode that I know that is set by configuration on every device that I can just unlock anybody's device. And I think in schools that would be really, really useful, and also helpful if that code could also get past this iPad is disabled for 60 minutes thing, because if that happens in schools, nothing I can do about it. I can't I can't put in a magic password and reactivate their iPad. That's locked hard. So there are some situations where I think some kind of administrator access to the device, and I don't mean like an admin user, I just mean a second level of passcode that you could put on every device. So there's two passcodes that open the device, one that the administrator knows and one that the pupil themselves knows. I think that would be really helpful in schools.
Why don't we, before we move on to the next one, take a moment and thank our next sponsor. It's Beedox Timeline 3D for iOS. We've mentioned these guys all year long. They are a great group of guys over there at Beedox. They make an incredible app for iOS and the Mac as well. But to me, their iOS app is really where they shine because it's really, really simple, but it looks really, really professional. And I think, to me, that's the mantra of iOS, that you can do incredibly professional things, incredibly powerful things, and it's very simple and very easy to use. So timelines are great tools for telling stories in historical contexts, and having visual references can make a huge difference in engaging audiences, so it's perfect for the classroom. Beedox had a classroom of students in France who worked together to build a multimedia timeline of the major events in World War II. The students included historical images, video clips, and narrations that they recorded themselves on the device. So timelines begin as standard 2D charts, and then you can do a 3D flyover with click of a button. It works great with AirPlay to an Apple TV, or you can connect it to a projector through the appropriate cables. It is an incredibly easy way to make beautiful multimedia timelines. It's gotten great reviews on the App Store. Our friend David Sparks over at Mac Sparky says it's like magic. It makes me look brilliant. They've been running some various sales, you know, here lately. So check out the price. It's very, very affordable, especially if you're buying in bulk through the volume purchase program. It's beedox.com, BEEDOCS.com. We'll have a link in the show notes and on outofschool.net. But, thanks to the guys at Beedox for sponsoring the show this week.
All right. So we come to the payload that every systems administrator just gets all drooly at the mouth when they see, which is the restrictions payload. Because as we know, we just love to lock things out. And we talked about this a little bit last couple of shows when we talked about configurator and the idea of supervision. And something that's kind of new in this area is additional restrictions in iOS 6, which are only available if your device is supervised. Right, so there were always certain things that you could turn on and off by configuration, even on a device that you didn't supervise. But it appears that as time goes on and more restrictions are made possible, that they're only being made possible if your device is supervised. So this is why supervision is an important decision to get right at the start, because as we know, it's hard to become supervised when you haven't been supervised, but also that as iOS develops, one can imagine that there will be more restrictions available, but they're only for supervised devices. So, what's your favorite restriction, Bradley?
Let me pull it up and see, because it's funny because it's changed over time. I guess it depends on what hat I'm in. If I'm in my administrator hat of a, because again, you manage cart-based deployments, you know, a little differently. I guess the ones that I'm most thankful that are there are not allowing the Erotica bookstore, mm-hmm. and I have three. Okay. The bookstore, turning off iMessage, and turning off screen capture.
Interesting.
Yes.
Screen capture.
Well, again, going back to our conversation about Apple Configurator, and knowing where, if this was a one-to-one deployment, I wouldn't care about the screen capture. But mm-hmm. I have to be able to, like, if students are just taking screen capture after screen capture after screen capture, it starts to fill the device up over time. And yeah. With iMessage, again, not that I'm on iMessage, that's great for students, you know, that use them in their personal devices. But in cart-based mm-hmm. deployments, I don't want students signing in and out of their iMessage accounts on the device.
Yeah.
So again, I think these restrictions, you know, if you're depending on your deployment, they're different. I mean, you probably don't care about totally. iMessage, or you don't care about screen capture. Mm-hmm. You know, so you don't care about you.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's like having screen capture on would be really important because we do a lot with screen capture, and it's a way that kids use that feature to get captures of whatever it is they're looking at and maybe bring it into an app to show in Keynote or whatever.
Right, or Sketch, and you can annotate. Or it could be a way that says, hey, yep, I completed this assignment. And you take a screenshot, mm-hmm, and you email it. So, you know, again, I think anyone that's, like, if you read a blog post that says, like, this is the perfect restriction setup, don't read it, because every school will be differently depending on the type, yep, of control your administrators want you to have and your devices. I mean, if it's a one-to-one, I mean, if I'm deploying a one-to-one, I want to have as few restrictions on as possible because I want this device to be as powerful as possible in their hands.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. And I think there are some restrictions here that are, they're good to know that they're available, but not necessarily that you would use them straight away. And I'm thinking particularly of the allow use of camera restriction. If you disallow the use of the camera, it just acts as if there's no camera hardware in the device. So the photo booth app disappears, the camera app disappears, and any app that tries to use the camera inside the app will be told by the API that there is no camera available. And that's not something you want to turn for every device in a school. But, for example, if there is a pupil who is giving you trouble with the camera, you can put them in a kind of camera detention and you can lay on. this is where the self-destructing profile becomes really useful again, though, is because you could say, well, okay, here's the 7-day Sinbin camera profile on your device. Right, so your device will not have a camera for 7 days, basically.
It's, you know, the modern day detention. It's like, all right, you don't get iMessage or camera for a week.
yeah, and you could do the same thing with Safari, for example. Too, you can control.
Oh, that's
things.
Hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, some of the restrictions are only applicable to phones, right? So allowing voice dialing, allowing passbook notifications while a device is locked. Allow data roaming and things like that are things that are only applicable to phones and not necessarily that interesting to schools using iPads. But there's a couple we should talk about in detail, Bradley. I think one is allow installing apps and allow removing apps, because this is something that can trip you up pretty badly if you get this wrong and don't test the consequences of these, because the consequences are pretty big. The allow installing apps restriction, if you turn it off, basically what happens is that the App Store disappears from your home screen. But also, as of today, if you turn that restriction on, if you disallow the installing of apps, and then you connect your iPad to iTunes and try and sync over new apps from iTunes, that will also fail. Installing no apps really means installing no apps. You can't push an app from an MDM server. You can't install it from Configurator without removing that profile first, and you can't install it on the device either. So if you turn that restriction on, you really are saying the apps that are on this device when I turn on those restrictions are the only apps that will ever be on that device. Yeah, so Bradley, I think you use the disallow installing apps profile, is that right?
Well, let me make this correct. If you uncheck that, does that allow Configurator to install apps? I have allowing installing apps on. Of course, there's no store installed on the there's no sign in on the iPads. You're not signed into the iTunes store.
Yep. So there may not be a password on the device as such, a logged in account, but you still have that restriction disabled so that the store app does appear on the device.
Right. I mean, theoretically, if a student signed into that, if they knew it, if their iTunes account and could sign in, and then they, you know, I guess could install an app, mm-hmm, but then you'd also know who it was because this account would still be signed in.
Indeed. Indeed. The counterpart of this, and this is a new restriction in recent versions, is allowing the removal of applications. And this is something that I know our teachers of younger children have wanted for a long time, because quite often what would happen is that one of the kids would just delete one of the apps off their device. And this is also another thing for cart-based deployments, Bradley, is that, you know, it's another way to prevent people from mucking about with your configuration, is to disallow removing apps. And that's another one that's supervised only. So I've tested that a couple of times on our devices, and it works pretty well. It just you know, you can still put the icons into jiggly mode so that you can organize them into folders and whatever, but you, none of them get the delete icon. They all behave like built-in apps where you can't delete them. So that's quite useful. One thing I was going to say about that, though, I think we haven't really talked about this yet, is the idea that you can have multiple profiles and they don't all have to be supersets or subsets of one another. So one of the things that people often get confused with when they start with profiles is they say, well, okay, I want a basic profile that turns off X, Y, and Z, and then I want another profile that also turns off the camera, let's say. Do I have to like duplicate the first profile and then just change one thing and make sure they're all the same? And the answer is no, because what the rule, if you have two profiles that set conflicting restrictions, so for example, your base profile might turn off, let's say it turns off iMessage, Siri, and in-app purchase, and then you want another profile that will turn off the camera, you don't have to turn off iMessage, Siri, and in-app purchase on your camera restriction profile. Because what will happen is when two profiles appear on the device and if there's a conflict, the rule is that the most restrictive setting wins. Okay? So if any profile on the device turns off Siri, Siri will be turned off. Right? Even if five other profiles say that Siri should be allowed. Okay? So that's something to bear in mind when you're designing these profiles, is that you don't have to, you can have your base profile and then you can just have all the defaults with the camera turned off or FaceTime turned off or the bookstore turned off or something like that. You don't have to, you don't have to keep them all consistent with one another in order to get the effect you want on the device, which is really useful because it means you can make easy restrictions really quickly.
Yeah, that's a, you know, I'm assuming they planned it that way, but it's a really great feature.
Yeah, it's not really clear where that's documented. I think it's documented in the help of Apple Configurator at some point. But it's really a good idea to factor out your profiles as much as possible so that you can apply and remove certain features as you might want them. So, for example, you might want to turn off installing apps for most of the school year, but at one point in the year, you might want to say, okay, I want to take the restriction off, do a whole bunch of syncing, and then put the restriction back on. Now, if you have turned on that setting as part of a much bigger profile that includes passcode restrictions and Wi-Fi settings and all that kind of stuff, you have to rip off the whole thing just to install an app and then layer it all back on and make sure that the passcode gets set up properly again and so on. Whereas if you factored that out and just had the app installation control in a separate profile, you could just take off that one little setting, do your syncing, put that one back on, and the rest is undisturbed. So that's a really important technique to get into, is factor out your configuration profiles properly so that you don't have to have a big all on, all off scenario at some point during the year. I have now made, I think, 10 different profiles in my configurator that I can lay on and lay off. I've gone a bit nuts with that because I've kind of got, here's my base profile with basically the passcode settings, and then here's turn off the camera, turn off Siri, turn off this, turn off that, turn off the next thing. So I can layer on and off very lightly.
Yeah, it's, I guess the way to remember it is it doesn't have to be one profile to rule them all.
Yeah.
Going back to our nerd Lord of the Rings, you know, lifestyles.
Indeed. I asked you what your favorite restriction was, Bradley. I spent an hour last week just verifying exactly what the Siri profanity filter did for you. And it was actually, in fact, my job to try and make Siri say a bad word. And amusingly, I managed to invoke the profile. And what it does is, you know, Siri sometimes, if you say, search the web for headphones, let's say, Siri says, no, searching the web for headphones. If you command Siri to search the web for a swear word, it will then say, no, searching the web for, and it will actually beep Siri's voice. So it will do the kind of sensor beep right over the top of where Siri would normally say the, repeat the word to you. So basically what it means is you can't get Siri to swear back at you. But I found out that it only works for Siri and not for the text-to-speech feature. So if you turn on speak selection and then you go and you write some bad words in notes, for example, and have it speak them out, it will speak out the whole lot. So the more you know, I guess. There's a couple of other things that you might want to turn off if you're in a non one-to-one deployment, or one, even a one-to-one deployment where you're not doing the personal model, which is all the stuff to do with iCloud. So you can turn off documents and data syncing in iCloud, and you can also turn off iCloud backup, which are two things that you might want to turn off if, for example, you are deploying iPads to younger kids, even in a one-to-one configuration where you've got some other strategy for backup. And obviously they're probably not going to sync because they don't have, typically don't have their own iPhone, whatever, at home as well. So you can control some of that stuff as well. And you may also want to disallow some of the photo stream stuff as well if you have concerns about photos taken on the device being sent up to the cloud and then put out through shared photo streams or something. Then you can turn off both of those as well, which are things that you might want to do.
I guess I've never seen this before. Jumping over to the Applications tab under Restrictions, mm-hmm. and it says Allow the Use of YouTube. I imagine this is for pre-iOS 6 devices.
Yeah, that only applies to iOS 5 where YouTube's a built-in app. It does nothing on iOS 6 when you have Google's own YouTube app installed. There's basically nothing you can do about that. So there you go. You can also turn off iTunes Store and Game Center in there. And you can also turn off Safari. And this is something that I've seen some schools do. Do you have use a filtered browser, Bradley?
We don't. Because I think they're all terrible. Other than the Dolphin browser, but I mainly love that for the Evernote integration. But Safari is just faster.
It is. And I've seen there are some companies who make like a kind of fake Safari that is filtered in the browser. Which means that you can, if you turn off Safari and only install this other browser, then that browser's sort of talking to some cloud service and being filtered, which is, in general, a pretty poor way to filter because so many apps have got embedded browsers in them, which means that you can typically get around this problem quite easily, unless you're also filtering the network as well.
Yeah, the way to do that is at the network level, not at the device level. That goes back to... Of course, a lot of schools have done things like browsers for the Mac? SafeEyes. A lot of schools have used SafeEyes in the past and things like that, and I mm-hmm. think they're all terrible. They muck up your system, and just do it at the network level.
Yeah. When you send devices home, you have to then communicate with home, obviously, that these restrictions that we do in school are not necessarily applying at home as well. But that's something that you can sort of work on at a policy level and even look into VPN and things like that as well. Now, the other thing that is in restrictions that I'm actually going to use next year quite heavily is restricting media content. And there's basically three settings you can do here. There's you can set the maximum allowed age ratings for movies, TV shows, and apps. And as we know, every app in the App Store is rated either 4+, 9+, is it? 4, 9, 12+, and 17+. And you can basically have 6 different settings for this. You can say don't allow any apps at all, allow 4+, 9+, 12+, 17+, or allow any app. So these are quite crude ratings in the sense that some apps which have quite innocuous content can sometimes be made to be a 17+ app. We've run into this only once, really, in 3 years, where we wanted to use a biology app which had diagrams of the human body, frontal diagrams of the anatomy for male and female. And because of that, it had been rated 17+, even though those pictures were in a teaching context, in a biology application, and not necessarily sexual in any way, they were still 17+, and we couldn't install the app. So... occasionally you get tripped up with that as well. And sometimes apps are miscategorized as well. Sometimes they're rated much lower than they should be as well. But what we're going to do, the reason I mentioned this in terms of the context of our deployment, is that we are actually going to disallow movies and TV shows for all ages. So the kids who are doing a one-to-one personal model, we're not going to allow them to install or download movies or TV shows to their device. And that's primarily just because we don't want them to eat up space on their device by downloading movies, because a movie these days is like 2 gigs or more. And, you know, depending on what size of device we put out, that could eat a fair amount. And certainly a season of TV shows can be pretty huge. So we are going to turn off both of those. And I've tested that on iOS 6, and it's interesting because what it does is, even if you sign into a pre-existing iTunes account where you have purchased and have in the cloud movies and TV shows that are in principle downloadable to your devices, it will grey out those settings as well. So it's not just that you can't, it's not just that you cannot buy them, but it's also that you can't download ones that you've already purchased, which is a pretty useful restriction for that kind of context. Even more so if you're using a 16 gig iPad.
Yeah, that's precious storage.
It certainly is. And you can also turn off the explicit, anything that's flagged explicit in both, or in music, podcasts, iTunes U and iBookstore now as well. You can turn off all of those. And the effect there is basically the same as if, as with the apps. If you go into their page on the stores, assuming you still have turned on the iTunes store and the bookstore, you can see the name of the book. But as far as I remember, you cannot see the cover. And in the case of music and podcasts, you cannot stream them or preview them on the store either. So that's the kind of restrictions that you get there. You can still know of their existence, but the content that you can see is much reduced. And we obviously turn those off. Yeah.
So two down.
Yeah.
Three down.
Those are only really useful if you're... You can kill this thing stone dead by turning off the store, right? So if you turn off the store, you don't need to really sweat what you put in there. But if you're keeping the stores on, which you probably want to do in a personal model one-to-one, certainly the App Store, if not the iTunes Store as well, you may want to put on a little lighter restrictions on the content that comes down through them as well. So there's hundreds of settings here, and I don't propose, Bradley, that we go through all of them, but there's a couple that we should mention as well. And the one that was... kind of played up a lot at last WWDC was the global HTTP proxy for the whole device. I have not used this setting in anger myself. I don't know. It's an iOS 6 restriction, so obviously we haven't deployed it on our iOS 5 machines. But have you used it at all?
We have not.
No. My understanding of how it works is basically that you can set up proxy server port, optional username and password. And once that restriction is in place on the device, all the HTTP traffic is directed through that proxy, regardless of whether or not the app itself is coded to use a proxy or not. Because in previous times, the difficulty with using a proxy filter was that a lot of apps just connected directly to the URL or the IP address that they were talking to. And they didn't give you any option to set up a proxy because it's not something that people are typically using a whole lot in outside of institutions and schools. But this is a setting that you can set that will push everything through it. And it's there if you need it, I guess. Let's talk Wi-Fi. This is your domain, Bradley, isn't it?
Somewhat. This feature, I guess at its core, will just save you time, particularly if you've got a, if you've got a long pre-shared key password, you can copy and paste it. It's preloaded in there. You're good to go. You know, one of the things that Aerohive and I know that Ruckus does is they have, you know, kind of what they call a private, Aerohive calls it private pre-shared keys, and I think Ruckus calls it dynamic pre-shared keys, where you can like generate unique pre-shared keys, and you can say, all right, this person gets three devices with this pre-shared key. And so like that way, you know, you're not using like a 802.1x, you know, deployment and with the, you know, Radius server and things like that and getting really complicated, but you're not just as simple as, you know, one password to roll them all. So obviously that doesn't integrate in here. And so, you know, if you go that route, you can't really use this because you don't have a way to, without making a ton of configuration profiles, you don't have a way to do that.
Yep.
But it works well. I mean, I imaged every iPad we have with it and they connected right away. It works well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can, you know, I have the auto join on the hidden network setting. My opinion is it's of my opinion that you shouldn't fool with hidden networks. It's not a security setting. it's all really only hidden from your eyes. Devices still can see it. It's still sending out beacon frames. And so just make them seen, put a passcode on them, and you're pretty good to go. Yep. Obviously, you use WPA2. Don't use WEP. I'm surprised that, like, WEP is even still an option on anything. It can be cracked so quickly, but I don't know.
Yeah, it kind of seems like time for that to die, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, just, everybody says don't use it. Well, then don't put it in there.
Don't make it possible. I don't know. Yeah.
Right. And so WPA2 works. We have a separate student SSID. Mm-hmm. The main reason is I do a little bit of filtering through Arrowhive's application control, I don't do on our staff network. So that's why I want to keep them separate.
Yeah. We did the same thing. The last time I rolled out configuration profiles en masse for all our deployment was back before we had our Arrowhive network, so this was last August, and we obviously just had one password for the whole network there, and we deployed it to the kids through configuration profiles so that everybody had the password. Nobody in principle knows it. I don't know whether that's still true or not, but what I'm actually looking at doing in the summer, I was working on this today, is doing that pre-shared key thing, so every pupil in the school will just get their own password, and I'll make their password, also their passcode for their iPad, work for the Wi-Fi, and they'll all get on the Wi-Fi with one device so they can log in themselves. And they'll only do that maybe one time, a couple of times in a year or so on. So it's not going to be terribly onerous to have them do that one time. And that way, the beauty of that in Arrowhive is that then I can go into my Hive Manager and I can see, okay, this user has got this device on and they're using this much data, or they're using these applications or whatever. Because at the moment, what I had to do when we deployed Arrowhive was I had to basically make a one user in our Arrowhive system which had the same password as we had previously had on our Apple network, just so that I didn't have to go around and reconfigure every single iPad for the Wi-Fi. And I can now separate that out. So that's going to be another change that we do in the summer. And I think I'll do the same thing as you, Bradley. I'm going to use a separate student SSID because we're looking at using the Casper suite for MDM. And there's a nice way, we'll talk about this in another show, but there's a nice way that you can take devices that connect to a certain SSID, and if they're not enrolled in your MDM, the Arrowhive system can actually push your devices to go and enroll and then get access to the network afterwards, which I thought was pretty cool. So we'll probably use that. Those are the big settings. The other one that we should mention is mail. And I don't know how much use this makes, how sensible it is to use this now, because in earlier versions of iOS, in order to set up a mail account, you had to go into settings and mail account and calendars and go in and set an IMAP server and a POP server and all this, and ports and incoming and outgoing passwords and all that kind of stuff. And in recent versions of iOS, it's gotten a lot easier, and particularly if you, like we do, use Google Apps for your domain, you can just say, let's go in, set up an email account, choose Gmail, put in your name, put in your email address, put in your password, and put in a descriptive piece of text for your account. And iOS will actually figure out all the other settings for you. So if you use one of the supported account types in iOS, it's probably easier and simpler on everybody just to have the kids set it up themselves on the first day of school and take 10 minutes to walk them through it, rather than go through and make it yourself.
My only my hope for iOS 7 is that they'll, because Google has kind of sunsetted the Google Active Sync integration. I know education can still use it, but obviously it looks like they're, kind of moving that away from that. So I'm hoping that the CardDAV integration that Google has now would be integrated into that setup, because that has been launched since iOS 6. So I'm sure in iOS 7, because they already have CardDAV calendar or CalDAV built into the sign in. So maybe they'll just add the CardDAV too.
Yeah, that would be useful. We've used CardDAV a little bit in school. We still have an OS 10 server in school, and we have used the CardDAV to, when we had kids emailing things into their Basecamp account. Basecamp creates a very, very complicated, hexadecimal email address for every project in the Basecamp system. So what I did was I downloaded them all as a vCard, put them into our CalDAV server, and then sent out a configuration profile to everybody's iPad that said it put in a CardNav account, and then, you know, the address book then sort of magically acquired a whole bunch of email addresses for kids' projects, and that worked reasonably well. So we might do something similar to that again, but there's all kinds of other little bits and pieces you can add. We've used, I don't know if you've used this, but we've used the calendar subscription as well. We have a school Google calendar that's public, and we, as part of our deployment, we put out a payload that just has the subscription to the public school calendar so that everybody's calendar is already pre-populated with that as well, which is...
Well, that's a good idea. Yep. We've used Webclips some. It's really handy, like, you know, if a teacher has, say, a collection of links they want the student to be able to have quick access to for, you know, an activity, it's obviously a lot quicker to have to add those to a website than it is to, like, you know, go in and bookmark those in an iPad. Mm-hmm. So we have, like, a little Google site that we just call iPad Links, and we just list the teacher's name. And so if the teacher says, hey, let's, you know, go to the iPad Links icon, click that, it brings up that website, then they can jump off from there. So we kind of add those as a web clip. And it works well, and you can kind of make your own little icon and
interesting
things like that.
One thing you could also do with web clips, I think, which might be quite interesting, is you could deliver iTunes U subscription URLs as web clips. I don't know how confusing that would be or whether it would be a good idea, but in principle, you could have, you know, five clips that said, you know, tap here to subscribe to this course and tap here to enroll to this course and so on. I don't know, that might be more bother than it's worth, but it's something you could do, I guess. We actually haven't done very much with it. The only one I might do in the future is Wikipedia, because younger kids can't ever get Wikipedia spelled right, so just having a Wikipedia icon on their home screen might be pretty useful.
Try having Baptist in your school name.
That can go wrong several ways.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
The rest of it's stuff that we don't use, like APN mm-hmm. and SCEP. We don't use that.
Yeah, so that, no comments. That's more kind of, at least APN is just for, like, cellular data, things like that. SCEP is more, in the days before NDM providers would give you configuration profiles that you use just directly to enroll devices in their MDM system, you could roll your own through SCEP settings, but I haven't used that in a while because Meraki, Casper, they all give you a profile to download and install and make it really easy on you. So that's the way to go with that. One thing to say about the Wi-Fi, there is an issue with if you are trying to enroll a device in an MDM server using something like Apple Configurator, in all cases, I believe, your device has to be up and on the network before you can install a MDM enrollment profile. So this is something that I have in the past had sort of slight problems with, because the auto join setting on the Wi-Fi payload in iOS 5 is a bit flaky. So sometimes I would put the Wi-Fi payload on the device and then try and put the MDM configuration enrollment on the device, and that would fail because the Wi-Fi hadn't come up and joined properly. So sometimes I had to actually go around and, like, go into settings and select the network on the device, and then I could install the MDM profile. I believe that's a lot better in iOS 6, but it's just something to be aware of.
Yeah, it is. It works great on iOS 6. Yeah. I can attest to that.
Lots of things work great on iOS 6 that don't work great on iOS 5 anymore, unfortunately. We are 6 weeks away from shutting down these old devices, so I'm looking forward to that day. They've been great for us. I mean, don't get me wrong. iPad 1 has been awesome. It's been a tank. I should probably write up a story about how few have broken, but it's time for a new device. It really is. Looking forward to that.
Lightning connectors for life.
Lightning connectors for the win, indeed. But you know what's really interesting is that we're actually not going to have to spend a lot of money on Lightning VGA adapters because we've got Apple TV in so many places.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that, you know, that pays for half the Apple TV. You know, because
that's,
you know,
true.
We pay, what, £95 or 40? Something for an Apple TV, and we'll pay, you know, almost half of that for one adapter, you know.
So imagine if they got that Apple TV cost down to, you know, it's, which ours is $99. If they got that down to $79, I mean, it really is like, why do you even want this cord?
Yeah, yeah. So that's that would be very pleasing. We still got a couple of classrooms that don't have Apple TV, and I think during the summer I'd like to try and get them an Apple TV as well, and that would just be the whole school done with Apple TV, which would be great. So that's configuration profiles. The recording of this show has been beset by technical difficulties of one kind and another, including my internet going out. So I'm going to have the mother and father of all edits to do once we get off here, but I hope we can cut together a reasonable show out of this. And
yeah, it only took us 5 hours to get 30 minutes.
You know, what can I say? It's like a fine whiskey. It takes a long time to...
We can't all have fiber optic internet coming to our house. It's all right.
You can stop talking about that right now. Thank you.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, you know, we made a mention on the show notes on part two of Apple Configurator, but typically our release date has been Thursday, and we're going to move that to Monday. And so you'll start looking for Out of School to be released at some point in your time zone on Monday. Just making some scheduling changes, and so maybe a good way to start off your week.
Yep. Monday's sometimes a dry day for podcasts, so we will kick off your week from there on, and we'll take it from there.
All right. Well, hope everybody has a great week.